from Jefferson Public Radio. I'm Eric Thiel. Welcome to another JPR Live session from afar. My guest today has just released his debut record, self-titled, called Logan Ledger, and he joins me from Nashville. Logan Ledger, hello. Welcome to JPR.
Good to be here. Thanks for having me.
It's our pleasure. You have released a beautifully retro country record that was produced by no less than T-Bone Burnett.
Mm-hmm.
Holy cow. Way to make a splash right out of the gate.
Yeah, you know, I was really lucky that that all came together. It's pretty much was just a simple twist of fate, really.
We'll talk a little bit about your relationship with T-Bone. I know it actually goes back a couple of years and has a tie-in to a television program as well. You're talking to me from Nashville today, but you are a West Coast guy, right? You're from around the San Francisco Bay Area?
Yeah, you know, I grew up in Marin County, basically. Though I did live in a couple different other towns in California when I was a kid, but, you know, I'm Bay Area for sure.
Do you feel that draw to come back out west?
You know, I do. I think it'll probably happen sooner rather than later.
I read that it was your grandmother that was the very first influence on you musically and her collection of music.
Yeah, you know, it was definitely the first time that I was exposed to older music, you know, probably outside of movies. So my grandmother introduced me to Elvis and the Platters and Roy Orbison and, you know, 50s music. And I really dug it from a young age.
Did she have a radio station on every time you were visiting, or was that her own collection of records?
Oh, no, she would, you know, it would be her own CDs. And she also sent me CDs when I was, you know, 8 or 9.
Oh, no kidding.
Years old. Yeah.
I was stuck with subscriptions to National Geographic. I think I would have preferred the music, to be honest.
Yeah.
This music, Roy Orbison, Elvis Presley, older R&B groups, obviously it stuck and sparked some curiosity. And you started digging for more from that era and from earlier eras, right?
Yeah, well, the next real, you know, formative moment in my childhood musically was when I started taking guitar lessons. And I had this guitar teacher who introduced me to a lot of really cool music, Bob Dylan, and, you know, he started me off on kind of a, you know, learn your cowboy chords kind of course. So he gave me a book of Dylan songs, and Bob Dylan was really like the catalyst for me getting into older folk music and learning about, you know, the people that had inspired him, you know, in his early career. So, you know, I think some of my early guitar heroes were people like Doc Watson, and, you know, Mississippi John Hurt. I was super into anything that was on Folkways Records. So, you know, the New Lost City Ramblers and, you know, recordings of Roscoe Holcomb and people like that, you know, folky interpreters of folk songs. And then, you know, the original dudes who, you know, were recorded in the 20s and 30s. You know, I was really into Harry Smith's Anthology of Folk Music, all that kind of stuff.
So when you went to university, was it for music?
I really didn't know what I was going to major in when I went to college, but I didn't go to music school. I ended up getting a degree in film.
Oh,
which
yeah?
I haven't really used.
That was at Columbia, right? You were in New York.
Uh-huh, yeah.
What made you choose Columbia, coming from the San Francisco Bay Area?
I think it kind of goes back to Dylan and, you know, having this sort of romanticized notion of New York City. I think really that was it. You know, I wanted to go to New York.
Yeah.
So I applied to all the New York schools. And, you know, getting into Columbia was kind of a big deal for me and my family. So I kind of felt compelled to go. But I had a good time there.
Well, and you got to share your knowledge of music and bluegrass in New York on the radio.
Yes. Yeah. I had a radio show on Columbia's student run or also alumni run station, WKCR. Which is mainly a jazz station, but they have, at least back then, they had a couple country music and bluegrass programs. And the one that I helmed was on Sunday mornings from 10 to noon. It was called The Moonshine Show, and it had existed in some incarnation since the 60s.
Wow.
It's actually the very first DJ that they had. I think this is before it was called The Moonshine Show, but I think it was still on Sunday mornings. The very first DJ was a fellow named Pete Wernick, who's the banjo player in a Colorado bluegrass band, Hot Rise.
Which, oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Right on. So did you bring in crates of your own stuff, or did hosting the show give you the opportunity to explore the library of stuff at the station?
Mostly the latter, though I did bring in my own stuff from time to time. Yeah. Towards the end, I started using almost exclusively my own music. You know, I did it for 4 years. And in the first couple of years, I pretty much relied on the library there, which was a very extensive library. And they had a big vinyl collection, pretty much every, you know, county record you could think of, you know, the record label County, which reissued a lot of old-time blues recordings, you know.
I got to say, that's probably one of the main reasons I got into doing radio is the access to all of the great music.
Yeah, you know, and this is before streaming was really a thing, or, you know, you still had to really seek it out. I mean, obviously there was the internet, but there wasn't this kind of instant access that I think people have gotten accustomed to maybe now with YouTube and whatnot. I mean, not that YouTube did exist, but, you know, it was a different world even 10 years ago. It's kind of weird.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about this new record in just a minute. A fully formed, beautiful debut out on Rounder Records, self-titled, called Logan Ledger. Logan is my guest today on JPR Live Sessions. You can find information online at loganledgermusic.com, by the way. Well, let's hear a tune first. What do you want to perform first?
You know, I'd like to do a song that is sort of the official single from my album. It's a tune called I'm Gonna Get Over This Someday. Gonna get over this someday, I might as well get over it now. I'm gonna get over this some way, though at the moment I don't know how. I don't wanna be the judge, and I don't want you to hold a grudge. I'm gonna get over this someday, I might as well get over it now. I don't wanna compete with you, I only wanna be with you. Cry for you the whole night through. I'm gonna get over this someday, I might as well get over it now. Gonna get over this some way, though at the moment I don't know how. I don't wanna give you advice, and I don't want you to pay the price. I'm gonna get over this someday, I might as well get over it now. I don't wanna fight with you, I wanna take my flight with you. And I don't wanna say goodbye, cry for you the whole night through. I'm gonna get over this someday, I might as well get over it now. Gonna get over this some way, though at the moment I don't know how. I don't wanna have my sin, I don't wanna walk away. I'm gonna get over this someday, I might as well get over it now. Oh, I might as well get over it now. Yes, I might as well get over it now.
That is Logan Ledger playing live for us today from afar on JPR Live Sessions. It's the first single from the debut record called Logan Ledger out on Rounder Records. LoganLedgerMusic.com is the site. Thanks for playing that, man. By the way, what's in your hands? What are you playing on?
Oh, well, you know, I recently just started kind of shifting to electric guitar. You know, I've always been an electric guitar player, but I typically hadn't been playing electric guitar in my solo act, just with the band, and I've, you know, started playing it on my own. And this is a real special instrument that I've had for a few years. It's a 1963 Fender Jazzmaster.
Oh, right on. Beautiful. Maybe we'll get a photo of that we can post online.
Absolutely.
So you grow up in North Bay, you go to college in New York, not for music, you end up in Nashville. How and when did that happen?
Well, after I graduated from college in 2012, I moved back home with my parents, and I started playing in this bluegrass band called Windy Hill. I did that for a while. I also randomly was Ramblin' Jack Elliott's road manager for a time. Which was a great experience. Huh. And I had some friends from college who had moved to Nashville, and it just, you know, once again, seemed like a romantic thing to do. Really, that's kind of it.
So obviously you have to transition then out of bluegrass into maybe the sound that we know you by from the debut, but maybe something in between. Made some demos, sort of long story short, they ended up in the hands of none other than T-Bone Burnett.
Mm-hmm.
Holy cow.
Yeah, it's pretty wild. Yeah, it's crazy.
Did he reach out? Did he contact? Did you get a strange phone call that just says, "Hi, Logan, this is T-Bone Burnett"?
No, but sort of. You know, what happened was I have this friend here in Nashville, and one day I was over at his home studio, and he had this microphone that he had purchased and wanted to test out. He asked me to play a couple songs, and I played a couple songs, didn't really think anything of it. A couple weeks went by, and a friend of his, a fellow named Dennis Crouch, a bass player extraordinaire, who I didn't know at the time, had stopped by his house, and they were doing some sort of bluegrass project. And when they were done, my friend Mark, he asked Dennis if he'd like to maybe play a line or two on this demo he'd recorded from me. And I think Dennis wasn't really interested in the idea at first, but then he heard it, and he was like, oh, wow, okay. So he put a real-deal bass line on it, and Mark played some guitar, and they turned it into a demo without me even knowing that they were doing that.
Oh, wow.
And Dennis sent it to T-Bone, and they had a communication back and forth. And then I heard from Mark, and I went in and met Dennis for the very first time at his studio, got on the phone with T-Bone's assistant, and made a plan to go to Los Angeles. But I hadn't actually talked to T-Bone until I met him face-to-face.
Wow.
Which was only a few days after that.
Wow. So for some context, for folks that might not know Dennis Crouch, there is a record that we have played a ton over the years, an award-winning record called Raising Sand that had put out by Robert Plant, Alison Krauss. The band was bassist Dennis Crouch, drummer Jay Bellarose, and guitarist Mark Rebo. And oh, by the way, that's the band on your record.
Yeah, it's pretty much the same band with the exception of Russ Paul being on my record, yeah.
It's incredible.
Yeah, it's pretty awesome. You know, I specifically wanted Rebo to play on it, you know. He was kind of busy, and it was sort of, you know, it was unclear whether we were gonna be able to get him, but I really wanted him to play on it, so I made it happen.
Yeah, it's fantastic. So are you going to play another one on electric guitar for us?
Yeah, so this is, I think it's the very first song that anyone ever heard me play that was my own original creation. This is a song called Starlight.
Starlight ain't the daylight, but it will just have to do. Starlight will be the only light when I can tell my heart to you. Oh, daylight, when I see you on the street again, we'll talk a while as if we're only friends. And starlight will be the only light when I can hold you tight again. Oh, starlight that I wish upon tonight, star on high, why can't you hear my plight? sail me along these skies of blue. Oh, daylight's just another time to hide away and dream about the way it might have been. And starlight will be the only light when I can hold you tight again. Oh, that's when I can hold you tight again.
That is called Starlight. Perfect old school crooning country music. Logan Ledger is my guest. His debut is self-titled, just came out on Rounder Records. Information is at loganledgermusic.com. Obviously, you have been influenced by legendary country and Western, and I'm going to separate the two crooners for music history. You have referenced the Bakersfield influence and the creation of Western versus country. For folks that aren't intimately familiar with where those two things depart from one another, what's the difference, and what are those characteristics of that Western Bakersfield sound that intrigues you so much?
Well, you know, the very first music that I would, you know, would think of as Western is kind of like that Hollywood cowboy music in the 40s or 30s, really, you know, Gene Autry, Sons of the Pioneers. And that was always a very smooth kind of vocal style, much more poppy than anything that was going on in Nashville at the time, you know, like Roy Acuff or, you know, the McGee brothers. And then, of course, you know, once the electric guitar came into the picture, that happened first in the West. So most of the early electric guitar slingers all came from Western states. You know, if you think of Texas and Western swing, or, you know, on the West Coast, you know, with Leo Fender and his innovations. So I think of Western music, some of the definite characteristics of it are definitely like a smoother vocal sound. Not always, you know, obviously Bakersfield has, you know, Buck Owens has a tremendous amount of bluegrass influence, but also, you know, that smooth thing, which I am drawn to, and definitely electric guitars.
I'm enjoying the music lesson as well as the music today. Thanks for filling us in. You know, it's interesting. Looking and doing some prep for our conversation today, it feels like there's very little out in the world about you prior to like this last year. Like, but you hit with such a huge splash with this record, tremendous studio band, great producer. I've come across some co-writes that you've done. I know John Paul White was a co-write on Tell Me a Lie. You've done a co-write with the incredible Jim Lauderdale in the past. You've done some singing with Milk Carton Kids, a collaboration or was on tour with John Hiatt for a while. Is that right?
Yeah, I opened for him. I probably opened maybe 15 shows or something like that.
Ooh, it's a good start, man.
Yeah.
Congratulations.
You know. Thank you.
The song, I don't think that you're going to do it for us today, but there is a song on the record that, holy cow, the timing is hitting hard right now. And it's one of the couple of covers on the record, an old Henson Cargill tune called Skip a Rope. And I know it's not going to be part of our session today, but I want folks to go find online maybe not only your version but the original. Tell me about that song and the decision to put it on the record.
Well, you know, it was a number one hit in 1968, I believe, for Henson Cargill. It was really his only hit. And it's kind of amazing to realize that it was a number one country hit in 1968, considering, you know, the cultural divide. But it's a song that's just as relevant today as it was back then. You know, it's got lines about greed and racial intolerance, and you know, basically the idea is parents and their ideologies influence their children, and you know, it's this endless cycle of darkness. But you know, it's a dark song, and you know, a lot of people really didn't there's a lot of versions you hear. Like, there's a Jimmy Dean version, which is just absurd. Like, it's like the lightest, most almost clownish kind of, you know, musical treatment of what's really a very serious song. And, you know, I just felt like it was important for, you know, a white country musician to, you know, have sort of a progressive message. I don't think, I think it's important, you know, especially for this kind of music. You know,
yeah.
I don't want people to get the wrong idea.
Well, maybe it'll be the next single off the record once people discover
yeah.
it. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, so I know, obviously, you know, putting a record out and having everything shut down is inconvenient as all get out. What have you been filling your time with in the last couple of months since everything shut down?
You know, I've been doing a lot of cooking.
Yeah? What's your thing? Yeah. What is your specialty?
Well, I'm pretty much a master of grilling shrimp and steak.
Right on.
You know, I ate probably too much meat, but yeah, that's one of my few vices. But I've been making a lot of steak fajitas lately. I have a very special marinade.
I know someone who has appreciated all of the time you spent at home, Georgia.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah, it's my roommate's dog. She's my roommate too, you know.
She's like a pit mix, right?
Yeah, yeah. She's like the sweetest dog ever, basically. I don't think she would ever... I've never seen her do anything that wasn't just totally sweet.
Well, I'm so glad you had time to chat with us today. The record is absolutely beautiful and just an instant classic. I appreciate you playing for us.
Oh, thank you, Eric.
Logan Ledger is my guest today on JPR Live Sessions. The debut album is self-titled. It came out on Rounder Records at the beginning of April. LoganLedgerMusic.com is the place to go online. Will you play one more for us?
Yeah, this is a song that I wrote called Imagining Raindrops.
I'm looking out my window at a sunny day, I'm imagining raindrops and clouds of gray. I'm wondering where you are, if your heart is true. And I'm imagining raindrops. No sunny day could make me blue. Now the world that I see through the eyes of my mind is so dark and dreary since you've left me behind. And I'm wondering where you are, if you still love me. And I'm imagining raindrops, the world I see I don't believe. I'm imagining raindrops, the world I see I don't believe. I'm imagining raindrops, the world I see I don't believe.
That one's called Imagining Raindrops. It's Logan Ledger playing live for us today from his home in Nashville. His debut record is self-titled, Logan Ledger. It's out on Rounder Records. LoganLedgerMusic.com is the website. Logan, thanks again for doing this. It's great to chat.
Oh, thank you, Eric. I'd love to come back.
Come back in person next time, why don't you?
Absolutely, I'd love to.